Good morning, and thank you for tuning in to 88.5 KRFY for Community Conversations. I'm today's host, Chris Bessler. Today we talk with our three District 1 legislators before the Idaho Legislature kicks off its 2021 legislative session, which starts this Monday, January 11th. We interviewed each of our three legislators by phone earlier this week, and following this introduction, you'll hear in sequence from Senator Jim Woodward, Representative Heather Scott, and Representative Sage Dixon. They give us their thoughts on the major issues the legislature will be working on, their own goals this year, and some issues that particularly impact North Idaho that residents will want to watch for this year. Remember, if you miss all or part of our live broadcast, you can always hear recorded podcasts anytime on our website. Just go to www.krfy.org. And with that, here is today's community conversation. We're speaking now with District 1 Senator Jim Woodward. Jim, thank you for being with us today.
Thank you, Chris. I always appreciate having the chance to talk on your show.
So we're coming up on the 2021 legislative session. And, of course, at this point, I guess there's a lot of speculation that we can do about what's coming up in the next session, what kinds of issues the legislature will be dealing with. But I want to throw it out there. You know, give us your speculation. What do you foresee will be some of the major pieces of legislation that are likely to come up in this next session of the legislature?
Well, Chris, I think one that affects all of us is property taxes. We've spent some time now this past summer and this year talking in an interim committee about some solutions for some of the challenges in our property tax structure. And at least we'll make some headway on that, I believe. And maybe we'll be into the next session also with some of those. But we have a property tax system that doesn't respond well to ups and downs in the economy. It works in a steady state condition, and we need to come up with some different answers so that we aren't always challenged by the property tax system when we are going up or down. If you look in Idaho history, every time we've changed the property tax structure, you can also look at what the economy was doing and see that the system doesn't work too well in economic upswings or downturns.
And we're seeing that right now with home prices, home valuations zooming up here in Bonner County, and which, of course, will incur bigger property taxes for folks. And I think that some folks probably are getting taxed out of their homes.
A true statement, Chris, those residential values are going up. And if the taxing district budget doesn't change, then the total tax collected doesn't change. But when your assessed value changes, it does change how much that property contributes to that total tax burden. And so if residential properties are going up very fast, but commercial and ag and timber aren't moving as fast, then the residential sector or the residential properties start to pick up a bigger and bigger burden and see higher taxes, even if the total, if the taxing district still hasn't changed its budget. So it does move the values around. And so that's been some of the problems. Not so much necessarily the budget's changing, but the share that residential is picking up is greater and greater because there's so much demand for residential real estate here in North Idaho because it's such a great place to be.
Yeah, we're sure seeing that right now. So what's an idea of a way to help ameliorate that?
Well, the easiest couple of pieces on helping out in property tax are the homeowner's exemption, which is currently homeowner's exemption or homestead exemption is set at $100,000 maximum or 50% of the value of the property. That's been at different values, and it did index in the past with values, but it does not now. It's set at $100,000, so we need to go back and look at that. And then the circuit breaker system for those on fixed income and lower incomes it is also something that I hope to take a look at. Those are the two of the easier ones. And then there are some other pieces of the property tax system that it takes a fair bit of time to explain.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well,
so that's
taxes
one.
Are going to be that one of the things you wrestle with down there.
Yes. I'm sure we're going to have some discussions also around the the pandemic response this year. It's on everybody's mind. There have been a lot of challenges this year and change, a lot of, for everybody. And so we'll take a look at those sections of code that deal with emergency response, which is Idaho's code is broke up into titles, and Title 46 is the section of code that deals with emergency preparedness under the Disaster Preparedness Act. And then Title 39 is our health and safety. And so we'll go into those sections of code, take a look at where improvements can be made. Those sections of code, for the most part, were written in the 70s, so they're about 50 years old, maybe a different time, and they certainly haven't been tested as they were tested this year. So we'll get back into those and see what if we need to make some changes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can't imagine how the pandemic won't be a major, at least topic of conversation down there. Do you see any kind of policy direction coming from the legislature as pertains to the public health measures that have been taking place, like mask mandates? We're currently under a mask mandate here in Panhandle Health District, which encompasses the five northern counties. Is there a role for the legislature in that?
Well, there is, because the Title 39, the health and safety, includes in Chapter 4 the health districts. We have seven health districts in the state. What's the proper role of those health districts? Should they be able to mandate masks? All of that will be up, and I'm sure it'll be a little bit contentious. I hope that we sit back and take a look at it a little bit and really ask policy questions and not take some of the emotion out of it and have a good, strong conversation on what we should be able to do during an emergency. We've had other emergencies in our history, in the state history, not necessarily a pandemic, but if you look at the Teton Dam failure in the mid-70s, and mm-hmm. So how fast can we react? We want to minimize damage and minimize loss of life, and so what should the executive branch be able to do in response to an emergency? And there, I'm sure there are other examples, and so we need to keep in mind all of the different scenarios and try and come up with a piece of policy that best suits us.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, I'm sure we're going to see a lot of reporting on that particular discussion down there. Other legislation you think might be coming before the legislature this year?
Well, we'll be looking. I'll be spending a lot of time on the finance committee with the budget. In the budget is legislation, but it's not in the sense of policy legislation necessarily. But we go through and appropriate all the money. The state budget last year was about $9.4 billion. Always with that $9.4 billion, because we have a requirement to balance the budget, then we leave some money left over. We anticipate an ending balance. And right now that projected ending balance has grown significantly since we left last March. We thought there might be about $55 million left. That was what we budgeted to. And because of some changes this year, that ending balance right now looks like it should be around $600 million. So we'll have some additional funds to work with this year. And I think we'll hear soon in the governor's state of the state address what his priorities are, and then we'll balance those out with what folks in the legislature are interested in doing. But I anticipate, I should step back and say that $600 million really looks like it's one-time revenue. Oftentimes we look at state revenue as ongoing, income tax and sales tax, what are they going to be this year and next year and the following. And the $600 million looks like it's one-time money, because some of it is additional federal funds that have come in this year, and then some of it is probably from the temporary influx of folks we've seen this year with sales tax in the state. So we're going to take a balanced approach at how that $600 million can be used, and hopefully that balance is between some one-time investments, hopefully in transportation and some other areas, And then taking a look also at some additional rainy day funds, making a contribution to a rainy day pot of money, and then also looking at, I think, some form of tax relief also. So that's when I say a balanced approach to this. That's probably the three areas that will be the largest part of that is some one-time investments, putting away a little bit of money, and then the tax relief, hopefully.
Mm-hmm. Seems like I saw a story recently that this is actually a historic surplus, largest ever, or one of the largest ever surpluses in the budget.
It probably is. I haven't heard that, Chris, but it's a big number. But
it's a lot. $500 million, yeah.
So one example of where does that $600 million coming from? Well, normally we have the Medicaid funds are provided a 70-30 match between the state, the standard Medicaid funds, 70% federal money and 30% state. And I believe that match right now, there's an additional 6% on the federal. And so that contributes to, or makes up about $200 million of that $600 million is that there's extra Medicaid fund money flowing into the state this year. It goes into the general fund, and
mm-hmm.
that's part of that general fund balance.
Mm-hmm.
So,
is there any way that money comes back directly to local governments, like counties or cities?
Well, if there's a transportation project, typically that money does come back in a split. In the past decade or so, normally with the extra money and what we had before, a program called the Surplus Eliminator, where extra money on the ending balance would be divided between the Idaho Transportation Department and then local entities at a 60-40 split typically. And so there's a good chance that something like that might be in the works, and we can get some local projects done in the transportation area and maybe other programs.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, do you have some personal goals in this legislative session, legislation you wish to propose yourself?
I don't have anything that's big legislation. I'm just my third year in still. I like to say I spend my time on the business of state government. So serving on the education and finance committees, that takes up a great deal of my time. And then this year I'll also be serving on the transportation committee as vice chair. So between those three committees, there's plenty to do there. We usually have about 900 different pieces of law proposed. So I don't know that I need to add more to that unless I see something that's really pressing. I'd rather continue to clean up what we have and make sure everything's working for folks. I'm still a little bit concerned about the vehicle insurance verification program that we put into place a couple of years ago. I wasn't supportive of that at the time, and we still haven't pulled anyone's vehicle insurance or pulled their registration, but that was put off because of the pandemic, but we still have a program, a law in place that if you don't have vehicle insurance, or if the transportation department doesn't have information showing you have vehicle insurance, if that information is not up to date, then after a 2-month warning period, the department will be revoking registrations renew your registration after it's been revoked is $75, which is actually more than what most registrations cost in the first place. So that's something I'd like to go after and clean up. There's no shortage of work to be done in just looking at existing code without bringing more code into place.
Mm-hmm. Do you hear from constituents that ask you to carry a particular issue or even a specific piece of legislation forward?
You know, I have not had any requests like that, Chris.
Mm-hmm.
Our email inboxes get flooded with requests from out of state, which I don't think is necessarily appropriate to look at, or if there were something that needed to be done there. But I I think the people of the state of Idaho certainly know what's best for them. So I do see requests from out of state, but I typically don't put a lot of consideration in those.
Mm-hmm. How about, are there some issues that you want your constituents to know about, other than the ones we've mentioned here, that you think they should follow because it would especially affect us here in District 1?
Well, one of the big topics coming up this year that will affect us across the state is reapportionment. So we'll have the census results soon, and when we get into that, we'll have a six-member commission, which is bipartisan, so it's three Republicans and three Democrats on that commission, and we'll be drawing new district boundary lines. And you know, for a lot of folks in the area just south of Longbridge and on the east side of the highway, the Bottle Bay, Garfield, Sagal area, it'd be great to have those folks in District 1. I'd like to be able to represent those people because they really are part of the Sandpoint community. So I hope that those lines are drawn or we can pick up that part of the Bonner County community.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and they used to be in District 1. And then I think it was just in the very last redistricting, which happens every 10 years after the census is conducted, they got split off into that really long, the District 7 that goes all the way down past Orofino, down to Riggins even. And it's so spread out that people in Sagal really don't have, you know, somebody personally involved with their local issues to represent them. So that'll be an interesting one for people to watch. One question that might come up, or I wonder if it'll come up, is, as you know, the county sued the city over the Memorial Field policy that allows the festival at Sandpoint to prohibit carrying firearms into concerts. The lawsuit's been dismissed, but that underlying issue is still there, which is if a city or county leases a public park to an organization like the festival, does that give that private organization the ability to impose a no-guns policy? Is that something that the legislature might deal with this year? As it stands right now, I think the festival is kind of in limbo, wondering, you know, what might occur if it tries to pull off a season again this year.
I believe I read the other day that's back in the courts, and the person who had standing there has filed a lawsuit. So that might be back to the judicial branch. And so I think while it's in the courts, I don't know if you'll see any action out of the legislature. But we did realize last year that it's not a question unique to Sandpoint. Boise, Pocatello, oh gosh, there's a whole laundry list of towns that have public-owned property and have events and they're rented out. Nampa, it's something that is of interest across the state.
Yes, I do think other municipalities are, they have the same sort of situation where they have public parks or structures that they let other organizations use, and so the question is out there for a lot of other towns as well. So I was wondering if the legislature would deal with it, but as you say, it's not just the county coming after the city. There was some citizens that are pursuing that as well. So I had not seen that case had advanced. So I guess we'll all be watching that one. Well, yeah. Senator Jim Woodward, we're about out of time. Anything else you want folks to know?
Legislature. Well, maybe not so much legislature, but the other piece that's coming up for the city of Sandpoint that folks should follow is the population. If the city of Sandpoint lands over 10,000, there's potential to lose our status as a resort city. There's a piece of Idaho code from the 70s that puts 14 or 17 towns across the state in a special status. McCall and I think Driggs and Sandpoint included, that Sandpoint has the ability to have a bed tax, which is part of the Sandpoint city budget and important to the city. And I think as in a tourism community, it is important to be able to have that tax to help fund some of the extra costs associated with a lot of folks coming into town for seasonal events. And the population limit on that resort city status is 10,000. So Sandpoint's coming right up against that. We'll see soon whether the city can retain that or not. And in the meantime, we'll continue to work to maybe change that piece of code on what that limit is.
Make it larger, like 12,000 or 15,000.
Right.
Yeah.
Or grandfather those that are in the program. But when we have the events like the festival, Lost in the 50s and so on, it costs money for law enforcement, cleanup, and so on. So there are costs there, and it'd be nice to be able to recover some of those costs from the folks who are here having a good time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it poses a burden on our services that are designed for a city of 8,000. If we have, you know, 20,000 people in town, it incurs extra costs for us. And that's kind of the intent behind that resort city status. Yeah, so that's an important one for people to watch as well. Well, Senator Woodward, how would people get in touch with you if they want to communicate with you while you're in the legislature this year?
Well, the best way is certainly on my Senate email address, which is jwoodward@senate.idaho.gov. And that's available on the legislative website also. Legislature.idaho.gov is the website. It's really easy to do a Google search and find the Idaho legislature, and you can find a list of all of us. But email works best. I do appreciate hearing from folks, and the individual emails are wonderful. We also get the same email sometimes 50 or 100 times, and that doesn't have the same effect, and it's harder to respond to all of those. But if you have something to say and it's your own words, your own thoughts, I really do appreciate hearing from folks.
Well, Senator Jim Woodward, good luck down there in Boise. Carry the torch for us.
Thank you, Chris.
We're speaking now with our first district representative, Heather Scott. Representative Scott, thank you for taking time to talk with us today.
Thanks for having me on.
Well, we're coming up on 2021. As people are listening to this, actually, it will be 2021, and the legislature will be going into session shortly after this airs. The question always going down there is, what do you think are going to be some of the major pieces of legislation that are likely to come up before the legislature this year?
Well, I have been in meetings all week with caucus members and other legislators, and the big push this year is going to be to rein in the governor's emergency control powers. I think we've all are happy 2021 is here. There's been a lot of overreach by the executive branches and agencies. And so that is what the focus I think you're going to see this year in the Idaho legislature is, to address some of these issues that, quite frankly, a lot of our code is old code. It was, I would probably say, taken advantage of, and it just wasn't clear on some of the things, and the executive branch kind of took advantage of that over the past year through this pandemic, and you're going to see a lot of changes to Title 46 and Title 56, and then we also have a constitutional amendment just addressing calling ourselves back into session and what that looks like.
Okay, well, let's dig in a little bit more on that. The governor has been, I guess, leading the state policies on dealing with the pandemic this year. What roles do you think the legislature should have when something like this comes up?
Well, I don't know that it's so much what roles we should have. I guess our roles are clearly defined in the Constitution of Idaho. And one of the problems we ran into in 2020 is it is not the governor's role to write law. That is not the authority we the people have given the executive branch of a state to do. And there has been at least 75 law changes, including our primary election laws. That is not the authority of the executive branch. So there is a time for emergency. The way our law was written, it was pretty vague in that an emergency could be declared for 30 days and then another 30 days. But what this governor has done is he has continued to roll emergency orders every 30 days, saying we're still in an emergency, we're still in an emergency. And by doing that, he has taken on many things he does not have the authority to do, such as write laws and appropriate money. So that is strictly in our Constitution, that is strictly reserved for the legislature. Now, if we do have an emergency, 30 days, someone needs to step in and start taking charge. But to roll an emergency and roll it and roll it, and then to get outside your boundaries as defined clearly in the Constitution, that's where I think the legislature has said, this is not your role.
Heather, is there a specific piece of legislation that you're going to propose or that you think one of your colleagues will propose that will define this differently for the governor?
Yeah, absolutely. We have, I'm looking right now because I just got off a conference call, and I'm looking at 7 pieces of legislation to address some of these emergency control powers that the governor has. Some of them having to do with appropriating money, some of them to do with calling us into session or not, judicial review, all kinds of different areas, calling in the militia. So we're going to be addressing many different aspects of what could happen during an emergency. And what powers we actually want one person to unilaterally have. And I don't think that, I say that the legislature doesn't want to exclude the executive branch from being involved, but to give that power to one person unilaterally, that's a real problem.
Okay. You also mentioned that you expect some legislation will, or proposed legislation will address the powers for calling a special session. Tell us a little bit more about that.
So,
because there was a special session that was called by the governor, but at this point, it's only the governor that can call a special session of the legislature?
So there was some debate about that, and lawyers took both sides of that. And the leadership in the House and Senate wanted to be safe on that and just not violate the Constitution. But the way the Constitution is written, it was very unclear. And so the change would have to be in the Constitution, which means the House and Senate have to pass a resolution. The resolution is going to make changes to what a special session looks like, and then the people will have to vote on that if they're in agreement with it. And the piece I'm looking, the draft I'm looking at right now, just talks about since we are a part-time legislature, it just gets more specific and say we can convene into a special session upon written request of 60% of the memberships of each House. So that would be a way that we could say, yeah, this is such a serious matter that we need to be part of the conversation. And so that is what is being looked at. That will be a constitutional amendment, and we will move on from there.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Any other legislation that you think that's going to come before the legislature that folks around here should be keeping an eye on?
Well, I just think this is going to almost consume the legislature this year. I think it's going to I'm guessing it'll be probably a quick session with the second wave of COVID coming through. But I do think that we will address property tax. I don't know how we can't. Right now, Idaho has over $600 million of money that they have collected from taxpayers that is not appropriated. So that's extra money that the state's brought in. And so I think we're going to have to look at some property tax relief for the citizens and to return that money back to the people. So that's something I think. The Idaho, I know all your listeners are various levels of the scale, but there is an agenda that Republicans have put out. And so I don't know if you've seen that up north yet, but you should be able to find it at some point. Many of the Republicans have kind of put out an agenda, things that they'd like to see, and there's a mix of things. But I do think taxes and the emergency controls, those are going to be the highlights this year.
On the tax question, so we have this, might be a historically large budget surplus, $600 million, that's over $500 million. How do you think that ought to be spent by the state? What do you think ought to happen with that?
So that's the question. Of that $600 million, $350 million is an ongoing surplus budget. That's just every year they collect an extra $350 million at this point. And so we do have a rainy day fund, and I'm guessing that's fully funded at this point. An emergency fund, which I think is good. I think every citizen should have a rainy day emergency fund. We've tapped those all out. We're pretty flush with cash. Now the question is, what do we do with all this extra money? Let's see, the transportation department, they're going to want it for the roads. The schools are going to want it for the schools. The citizens, they never really get heard, but I'm guessing they want some of their money back. The prisons probably want it for the prisons. It's always a big fight for extra money. Mm-hmm. And what we'll see come through is we'll see all the budget requests. And since they know the money's out there, there'll be all kinds of extra money requests. You know, so like, oh, we need new vehicles. We need this year. We need to fully fund this or that. So that's what we'll be debating. What do we do with that extra money?
Yeah, and as you point out, I mean, the three you ticked off there, education, roads, prisons, those are always big budget items for the state to do. And usually they're always asking, those departments are seeking more money. So,
right.
I think it's probably safe to say they will again. And of course, maybe this is an opportunity to get caught up on some infrastructure issues around the state. So
I will say this. I think last year, a lot of Idahoans have suffered from the consequences, I mean, of COVID and of the government of Idaho shutting their business down or telling them they could not do this or they could not do that. And I think at some point we have to start looking at the individual citizen and saying, maybe it's time the citizen gets some relief. Mm-hmm. Government's always there. They're always at the table, but it's always the little guy that suffers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we're certainly seeing with the rising property values here, a bigger tax burden that is being experienced by folks in Bonner County, I think is fair to say,
yes.
just because the evaluations are going up so much, mm-hmm. what we're seeing here. Okay, so one thing that Senator Woodward brought up, I talked to him a little earlier, and he mentioned that there's going to be a bipartisan commission that's going to be working on redistricting, which we do every 10 years after the census. And I don't know if you have any insights on that, but we do have a chunk of Bonner County that is not in the first district. That's the Sagal area. They're in that District 7, which stretches all the way down to Riggins. Any chance for that? And I'm not sure what role you or the other legislators can play on this, but any chance we can get First District drawn in such a way that it does include that community?
So they are supposed to stick to boundaries like counties and stuff like that and not break us up. I wasn't around or active, I'd say. I was around, but just not active when they did that. We need to fight tooth and nail as citizens to say we do not want our county broke up. That is just, that's been the hardest over these past 6 years. All the people that just feel so disconnected from what's going on because they're just cut out and they're put in a district that's 2.5 hours to drive across. And so I will do everything possible. I don't know that I have a lot of ability because that's set up by a commission, but I will put as much input I can into that, and I will let citizens know how they can write to the right people, contact the correct people to actually put their input in on that issue.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Here's a question that I asked Senator Woodward. I'd like to ask you as well. We have an ongoing issue here. The county sued the city over the Memorial Field policy that allows the festival at Sandpoint to prohibit carrying firearms into concerts there. Now, that particular lawsuit's been dismissed, but there is another lawsuit that is, I think, is active that was brought by an individual as well. And the underlying issue is still there, which is if a city or county leases a public park to a private organization like the festival, does that give the private organization the ability to impose a policy like that? Now, this is a big issue for us because it impacts the festival at Sandpoint, but as I understand it, there are cities around the state that have similar sorts of public facilities that they do lease out to private groups, and so it is a an issue that could occur around this state. Do you know if the legislature might decide to take some kind of action on this?
You know, the fact that it's in the courts, we may be hesitant to address it. I can't say for sure. It is a complicated subject because of the way our laws are set up and the way the Second Amendment's set up and the way leases are set up, and it's kind of convoluted, and it covers different areas in the law, and it covers real estate law and lease law. So I think there was a move to address it as a legislature, and it's so complicated that we couldn't find a way to kind of thread that needle. And so I don't know. I don't think it will be priority this year, but, you know, I think we're just going to have a short session. I really do. I think as crazy as things are right now, maybe I'm wrong, but I just don't know that it will be on the top of the agenda this year.
Mm-hmm.
And I my guess is they'll wait for the courts.
Yeah, I mean, that seems logical that they would wait for the courts to do something. Do you want to give us any, do you have any personal goals in this session, that something, stuff you want to do down there or legislation you want to propose yourself?
You know, I have a lot of constituent bills that I'm running. Maybe one that, one I'm working on, I don't know if I'll have it finished in time, but I'd like to address, and it's probably not a big deal to everyone, but some of our state parks, all the booking for our state parks is done out of state by a national company. And what's happening is they set a date to book campgrounds and facilities. And we have a lot of, as you know, in North Idaho, we have a lot of recreation. We have a lot of Washington people and Canadians. And what they're doing is they're booking up our campgrounds. And the Idahoans who live here, who want to recreate here, are not able to even get a campsite. And I don't know if you spend any time at the campsites this summer or the parks or the boat docks, but I mean, 90% of the cars are from Washington.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, I saw a number of trailheads I was at there. It was definitely a lot of out-of-state cards. Now, and not even Washington, just Washington. There was Colorado and Utah, and it seemed like we're seeing a bigger influx of people from outside the area in our local parks.
Yeah, and I think, you know, we pay the taxes to have the parks, and so I just think I'm trying to figure out a way to give some priority and just the reservations alone for some of those campsites, because I've had more and more complaints, especially this year, that locals cannot even go camping in our own backyard. Mm-hmm. And so that's kind of disturbing to me, because that's what we pay taxes for.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, there's enough national parks. We can manage those nationally. Our state parks should have room for Idahoans in them. So mm-hmm. that's something I am working on, just a personal bill for someone. I always, you know, you never know till you get down there kind of what direction you'll go. I'm always working on several bills. Lots of times you work through other legislators. I've kind of had some good wins the last few years, and maybe it's time for someone else to bring a bill. So we'll see.
Yeah. Okay. Well, Representative Heather Scott, appreciate you taking time to talk with us, and hopefully we can swing back around mid-session and catch you again when you're down there and see how things are going.
That would be great. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you, Heather. Bye now. We're speaking now with our first district representative, Sage Dixon. Representative Dixon, thank you for taking time to talk with us today.
Well, I'm happy to do it, Chris. It's always a pleasure speaking with you and our listeners out there.
So we're talking about the legislature. The new session is going to start in just, I guess, a week from the time we're actually having this conversation. And the big question here is, look into your crystal ball, what do you foresee will be some of the major pieces of legislation that are likely to come before the legislature this year?
Well, it doesn't take too much of a crystal ball, given what we've been dealing with all year here, or at least since we closed out the session earlier in 2020, not this year. We're in 2021, obviously. But the issues revolving around the governor and the legislature and interacting with emergency orders has been a topic of conversation among each of the parties there and a lot of citizens since that all started to happen. So I'm certain that those are going to be some of the largest topics coming in. Emergency orders, how long should they last before the legislature comes in? Should the legislature come in immediately? Or what role does the legislature play in some of those decisions? We probably should be separating out the different types of emergency orders, because every year there's a few emergency orders for floods or whatever, natural disasters around the state, so we don't want to restrict something like that. But in a case of something like COVID, should that happen again, getting the legislature to be involved in the decisions that are made for the whole state, most of us in the legislature feel, is a very good idea. So that's going to be one of the largest topics coming up. There was issues surrounding public health districts also, and the edicts they were able to make under some of the older statutes that we had, and them not being accountable to the citizens in any way or hardly, in that the commissioners appoint those people of the certain districts, but there's no direct responsibility as if they were elected by the citizens. So looking at that relationship a little bit, or the power that they have. So most of what we'll do coming right out of the gate will probably involve those issues and trying to make sure that the legislature is able to fulfill its role in representing the citizens, but at the same time ensuring that the executive branch has the ability to move quickly where it needs to move quickly in some of those instances, but maybe shortening that duration up a little bit in doing that.
Can I ask you on this particular issue, are there some proposals that have already been drafted by legislators concerning this?
Yes. So when we met, we had a House caucus. The House Republican caucus met in early June, when a lot of the frustration with the governor's actions and our role in it came up. And since that point, what came out of that meeting was five topics that we thought really needed to be addressed. And we then went to the Senate and spoke with the Senate, and that is kind of what came about, or how the special session came about in August. So since early June, many of us have been working and talking to each other, so there's not multiple different or small nuanced pieces of legislation, that we have one or two pieces that are going forward in that sense. So yeah, for the past 6 months or so, those have been worked on, and we just had a House caucus presentation on one of the bills regarding separation of powers, essentially, is just an easy way to put it. But how does the legislature play into that role? Where should we come in regards to an emergency order under some of the powers that are delegated to the governor right now at this point? Not trying to remove any of his powers, but again, just ensuring that we are fulfilling our role in representing our citizens of our district.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Other issues you see likely to come up?
Yes. Property taxes have been a big issue also, and we've had an interim committee going. Senator Woodward serves on that, so we've had a good voice on that committee. I sit on the Rev and Tax Committee in the House. I've not been party to a lot of those conversations of what the interim committee is putting out. I did see that there are three pieces of legislation that they are proposing, and most of those, I believe, if not all of them, or I should say two of the three, if not all of them, deal with putting some restrictions on the localities as far as how they are taxing or using their taxable or taxed funds, the revenue from taxes, in an effort to kind of stop that growth of government, so thereby stopping the growth in property taxes. I think there will be other proposals other than that, but that's still an issue. Most of these other issues have been overshadowed by what we've been dealing with COVID, but I'm certain that will be a large topic as well coming forward, and I'd be happy to update people as we go forward with that since I sit on that committee and once I see some of the legislation. I think as we instituted or as we started receiving taxes on Internet purchases, it's been a pretty good stream of revenue. I don't say that. Anyway, it's been more than we expected. It sounds bad to say a good stream of revenue, but that was put into a fund called the Taxpayer Relief Fund under the thought of using that to offset what we would lose in revenue if we removed the sales tax on groceries. Now, that has not happened yet. We have a better idea of what the annual growth in that fund will be at this point, and I think some of that discussion will come up again. I do believe a lot of us still want to remove that sales tax on groceries. So as tax conversations happen and the discussion of how to use that fund, that'll be a topic again in that. And then another one that comes to mind is there was the Espinoza decision regarding school funding and public entity or public dollars going to private schools, and that really kind of opened up the prospects for school choice. And that's been something that has been knocking on the door since I've been in the legislature here in Idaho. And I think with that decision that came out of the Supreme Court, we're going to move in that direction again, and I think we'll be able to offer some more school choice for parents that are looking for that. So those are probably three of the biggest topics I can think of at this point. There's always a host of things that come through. I don't have constant contact with every legislator, and everybody's out in their district hearing from their constituents and developing legislation that comes in. I go down there with ideas of my own, but inevitably something else comes up or catches your eye or something will turn into a big issue that we didn't anticipate and can then suck up a lot of time in the legislature. But those mm-hmm. ones I just mentioned, I think, will be some of the largest topics that we'll be dealing with.
Okay, so I do have a couple of questions for you on, tax and finance specifically. The state, and it is due, I think, to the sales tax revenue going up so much, but the state's sitting on the largest, I think historically largest surplus it's ever had, $600 million is
right.
The number I've seen. That's, almost over $500 million. Do you foresee particular expenditures that are going to be earmarked for that funding?
I have not heard specifically. I've heard a lot of things being tossed about, and my main concern in hearing that was I sure hope we're not planning on this happening every year. And thankfully, the economists and the governor's staff are good enough about that. With the growth we're experiencing in population, they're anticipating maybe an extra $100 million every year going forward. But because we became somewhat of a destination during COVID, and then all the federal dollars that were pouring into businesses and individuals, that really gave us that big bump in doing that. So I think there's going to be some of it will be spent on education. I think I've heard that. I think there is some talk about tax relief going forward, but that may be coming out of the Taxpayer Relief Fund as far as the efforts that we've made to try and flatten our tax and lower those brackets, in a sense, I've heard talk about that, but nothing that that I've heard specifically that's going to be a big issue. And those just aren't conversations I've had, Chris. I'm sorry I can't give you any specific detail. I would assume that they're out there and there's some plans, especially now that we're a week away from going in, but I've not been party of those conversations, so I can't really say. It's just those two issues. I know the education dollars were a big issue with the holdback and some of the needs that are going on with the children being home more and still having to facilitate the online education with the public schooling. So those dollars will probably go to that as well, but again, I don't know any specifics right now.
Well, here's a related question as well. So as you know, if the city of Sandpoint goes over a population of 10,000 with this census that's going to be released here shortly, I believe, it could lose its resort city status. And that status allows it to pose a local option tax, which helps offset the extra services that are incurred by small towns that are resort cities like Sandpoint. Any chance that the legislature will act on raising that population level, which would help a small town like Sandpoint that's kind of knocking on that 10,000 population threshold?
Right. A couple of years ago, the city came to all three of us legislators, and we had a good meeting and discussed this, and all three of us see the value in the ability to do that, knowing how our population swells in the summer months and the burden that the city has to bear on doing that. So I've dug around that issue a little bit in the House, and I believe Senator Woodward has in the Senate as well. There's some resistance to that. There's a lot of people that don't like the local tax, local option tax. There's a push by the localities to have that be ubiquitous throughout the state, not just for the resort cities. But we're trying to find a solution to that, and whether it is just grandfathering in the cities that already are there at this point before the census, or if it's adding... One suggestion was to have a higher threshold for them passing rather than just a simple majority, that it would go up to, say, a supermajority or a two-thirds in order for it to pass. And some of the points of negotiation is where I think that comes in. That has still been in the back of my mind of how to solve that problem, because I know it's important to our area here. And just didn't make a lot of headway over the past couple of years. I think it was 2 years ago we first heard about it, and the city was looking forward and understanding. It may have been last year as well, but I think there's an opportunity there. I think there'll be a little bit of a trade-off for something similar to a higher threshold for passage, and then that makes some of the other cities nervous if they are pushing towards a local option tax, which they are. So, you know, the domino effect that sometimes goes on. And So I do think there's opportunity, and it is something I'll be looking at. But whether it happens or not, I don't know. It's hard to say what's going to happen this session. We're not even sure if we'll be there the full session. If a few people start getting sick, we might take an extended recess or call it off, depending on where it is. I'm not sure. So there's a lot of question marks going forward.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, legislating in the age of COVID. It's a real wild, some wild cards out there, aren't there?
Yeah, it's going to be a challenge. I think we've made some accommodations within the building. I know leadership was not interested in having people remotely participate from their homes. And we have a system where if we can't make it, we designate replacements and substitutes for us. Our rule of thumb is 3 days. If you're gone more than 3 days in the house, then you should have a replacement in there, and we give a list to leadership and the Secretary of State if that happens. So not going to allow anybody to stay home and remotely do their work as a representative, but there will be accommodations within the building that if there are people that feel they're in danger, that they can still be in the building and active with the legislature and still be safe. So there'll be a lot of new things when we get down there.
Yeah, I guess Zoom can only get us so far, right?
Right. There's a slippery slope argument to be made when you start allowing those things, and then it becomes, well, what qualifies and what doesn't as far as the need to stay home, and then it could really become kind of a detrimental issue to the body and how legislative bodies function if people are in different areas all the time. Although federally, the Speaker of the House allowed that to happen federally, but we don't want that here in Idaho.
So do you have some personal goals this session? Any legislation that you want to propose yourself?
I'm going to be working on something to deal with families in crisis, and it's kind of an intermediary step before children would go into the foster care system. There are organizations in the state and outside of the state that want to come into the state that help families that are starting to have problems that may lead to children being removed from the home out of necessity, I mean, out of safety and all the things that lead to foster care. But they provide safe families. It's called Safe Families for Children. And they have families that they vet, these organizations do, and they're willing to take on not just the children, but sometimes one of the parents as well, in order to help them ameliorate the situation before it becomes a state issue. And thankfully, Department of Health and Welfare and the Child Protection Division is on board with it, so it should be a fairly easy, well, easier than it could be if they weren't on board with it, effort to do this. And they would appreciate, you know, some of their burden being lifted as well by these families that are willing to do that. So that's somebody approached me with that, somebody locally did, and I thought it was had a lot of merit, so I'm going to go forward with that. I'm chairman of the business committee again, and it's always important to me that committee runs smoothly and that we treat the public well and that we have a good handle on things that come through there, because it's a pretty broad committee that deals with a large swath of business, from insurance to real estate to banking. It deals with all of our occupational licensing, all of our trades, and so a lot goes through there, and it's just important to me that is kind of buttoned down tight, and that takes up a lot of my time as well. But I'll be paying attention to a lot of these other things. I'm very interested in federalism and the proper role of government and separation of powers, so as we do those pieces of legislation, I've had my eyes on those as well, seeing what's going on. But that'll be the main thing that I'll be working on, is the Safe Families legislation.
Okay, great. Well, I think I can squeeze in one more question here. If you haven't already brought it up, are there any issues likely to arise that you'd like your constituents to know about so they can keep an eye on it?
Well, the property tax issue, I think, is a big one, because it did hit us pretty hard here in Bonner County and Kootenai County. It was all around the state, but we felt it the most, I think. And so paying attention to what the legislature is doing there and these proposals, and if they have an opinion, to let us know. It's always important to contact us so that we can balance off our thoughts and what we're hearing down there with what our constituents want. That's always important. There's a couple transportation issues. We're still trying to find a solution to the Lakeshore and 95 intersection, and we'll hopefully have some meetings about that and try and push that along, because everybody has a transportation issue in the state, so it's hard, and especially for us in the north, to get some attention. But we have some ideas, that your legislators do, on how to get that moving along quicker than it may be moving along normally, because, again, as our population's growing, that's becoming a more dangerous intersection there, and we need to do something before someone gets killed. Usually the unfortunate metric is how many people die, and then ITD moves, or it moves up the metric list, but we're hoping that we can bump that up before we start to see those numbers, and similar things up in Boundary County as well. But there's just a host of things, and sometimes I don't really hear about things until I can vote on them. So if the public is aware of something and has an interest, please let us know, and then I can pay more attention to it to make sure that I'm accurately reflecting our constituents up here.
And how's the best way for your constituents to get in touch with you?
I prefer email, which is sdixon, D-I-X-O-N, at house.idaho.gov. I'm not very good at returning phone calls, so email is probably the best way to let me know.
Mm-hmm. And you can find you as well on the Idaho's legislature site. That's legislature.idaho.gov. And there's a ton of good information. I got to say, that website's well done in terms of providing updated information so we can kind of keep an eye on what's happening down there.
Yeah, oh, it is. It's really good. You can see the minutes from every committee and our floor minutes, and see what the discussions were and votes and all of that. And people can also just send me an email to sage@sagedixon.com. That works as well, if that's easier than the legislative one. But either way, I will look at those and get back as quickly as I can. It's difficult sometimes during session, but that's the best way to let me know.
Well, Representative Sage Dixon, thank you for taking time to talk with us today.
Thanks, Chris.
That concludes Community Conversations today with our District 1 legislators, Senator Jim Woodward, Representative Heather Scott, and Representative Sage Dixon. I'm Chris Bessler. Remember, tune in each Tuesday and Thursday at 8 a.m. for more Community Conversations here on 88.5 KRFY Unity Radio. Thank you for listening today.